Benedictines throughout the ages have been associated with learning and education, and in fact preserved learning throughout the Dark Ages. Abbot Edmund Power is the abbot of St. Paul's outside the walls in Rome. He explains.
That again, I'd say, is a function of the stability. You can see how rich the concept of stability is, because in fact, any form of culture, whether it be art, music, literature, requires a stable context in which people can actually develop their capacity, their concrete gifts of making the art, but also can reflect on what they want to convey. In other words, art seems to spring from that context of stability. Now, I know some might disagree. Tension within a person, I would say, division or tension within an individual person can generate great art as a response to that as well. But the Benedictine monastery was a stable social unit, and ideally a very selfless social unit. Its purpose was not commercial success. St. Benedict, in fact, says in the rule, very concretely, if the monks make things and to sell, let them sell them at a price slightly less than what they're sold in the marketplace, to overcome the temptation to just make money for the sake of making money. So that there are these stable units of people dedicated to a spiritual search, dedicated to order, order in the sense of organization, clear cosmos rather than chaos, and of course this is the whole creative work of God is bringing order to the chaos. It's a reflection of that, and in that context they were obviously intelligent people. They had the time to actually study, to consider, to reflect, to write, and that became the kind of the nest in which classical culture was preserved.
In fact, the stability and order of the Benedictine community was seen as a possible model for the unification and direction for the fractured Europe of the Dark Ages.
Because there was chaos all around in those early centuries after the collapse of the Roman Empire. Europe sort of fragmented, and the monasteries were points of stability, points of light in the darkness, which is maybe why the Benedictine rule, I've said it's very valuable in itself, but it also had very powerful political exponents. It was a political decision in a way. You could say that the Emperor Charlemagne, for example, I'm not a great historian of the period, but the decision by people like him to disseminate the Benedictine way of life throughout his lands was maybe a conscious attempt to create culture, yes, but also to impose an order, because if the Benedictine rule was the basic norm for monasteries throughout a large area, then it was like a European constitution in a way. You could say St. Benedict is the European, that Benedictine life is that, or Benedictinism is the father or the mother of the whole European idea of today, which is basically trying to create something similar to what exists in the Roman period. You had all of Europe under one rule. I'm not saying that it wants to be a new European empire, but living in harmony with our different ways of looking at things. It's quite interesting the way it does relate to the use made of the Benedictine rule in the centuries following the time of Benedict.
The preservation of great works of learning, exquisitely and painstakingly copied out, could not have happened outside the context of a place where there was the time, love, and care to lavish upon the creation of works of beauty. Abbot Edmund describes a precious, illuminated Bible in the care of his own community.
Yeah, the whole art of writing, we know printing began in the 15th century, but the whole art of writing by hand, which was developed in the monasteries, the monks had the time, you know, and would sit with enormous patience. Benedict talks about patience being a primary virtue of the Benedictine life. He's thinking primarily of the tolerance with which you accept the weaknesses of others, which, if you do that, if you lovingly accept the moral and physical weaknesses of others, he says, you know, this is a way in which you yourself will grow in sanctity, which is very good. But this patience also would overflow maybe into your approach to your work. So if you're doing a work like illuminated manuscripts, we've got at the Monastery of St. Paul here in Rome what's called the Carolingian Bible, the Bible of St. Paul's outside the walls. It's a huge handwritten Bible dating from probably the early 9th century. It was done in France. It's not clear exactly who did it. It's full of illuminated images and so on, with an exquisite writing. And it was given by maybe, it was roughly the time of Charlemagne. It was given to the Pope, who passed it on very quickly as a gift to the monks of St. Paul's, where it's been ever since. But when you look at it, you think, goodness, how many years did that take to write? You know, every letter is perfectly formed by hand, you know, in a beautiful script, the whole Bible written with these wonderful illuminated images of from the gospel scenes. And you realise that this is the fruit of a profound stability, of a profound patience, of a sense of time that's not rushed, that life is a gift and you just move slowly through it. It's a very impressive sort of witness, I think, of what the Benedictine spirit can produce.
There is a sense of history and stability that comes about as a result of living in the 1300-year-old monastery of St. Paul's outside the walls. It gives strength and context to monastic living, but it can also be a mixed blessing.
Yeah, the longest, the oldest monasteries are as continuous institutions, because there are monasteries in many parts of the world and many of them are very old, but some of them were closed or destroyed because of political circumstances, like in France, for example, at the time of the revolution and so on. The monasteries of Austria, for example, have had a continuous life right through, and out of Switzerland, going way back into the, you know, 8th, 9th centuries, and St. Paul's as well, in the 720, we think 720, clear, the Benedictine monastery from that date. We've got the list of all the abbots from about the year 900 onwards. I must be the 280th or something, I don't know. Haven't counted, actually. But there is this sense of continuity and of fidelity to a tradition. It gives you a strength. It gives you a very kind of, it gives you a context from which you can move forward into the future, because we can't live in the past. We've got to live in the present and look to the future. This is a great strength behind us. At the same time, it can be an awful burden, you know, because a sense of responsibility to the past, or to a glorious past that no longer exists, or to a past encapsulated in an architectural ethos. You know, imagine some of these huge Baroque monasteries of the former Habsburg Empire and so on, and you think there's not all that many monks left live nowadays, because there aren't the number of monks that there were. And you think that must be a terrible burden for someone, you know, to feel, I've got this huge thing, we've got to carry it forward, and there's only 10 of us, you know. You know, it can be flattening. But so it's a mixed blessing, I think, the sense of a long history.
At the end of the day, however, a Benedictine community is a family in which every monk has a place.
Yeah, that's quite important, and it very much reflects St. Paul's own theology, you know, of the body. You know, the body has different members, and you know, not everybody can be a a toe or a thumb. He doesn't actually say that explicitly, but and the same in the monastery. I think the way to see it is that we all contribute to the well-being of the community, and as a result of the well-being of the community, we can help others who might come. It's not a selfish, inward-looking thing. But and there's different responsibilities. You know, someone has to be abbot. It's not an easy job, but someone has to be it. Someone has to be, someone has to do the garden. You could say the garden's more important than the abbot, you know, especially if the garden's producing the food. But everybody should rejoice in their own job, and do it with love and dedication, and that is their way to sanctity, as part of their monastic journey.
We are vegetating, we are